Welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast, where you can expect cutting-edge information and strategies relating to success mindset, leadership, wealth creation, and relationships, all based in universal law and David Nagel's own experience as he rose from minimum wage forklift driver to multi-million dollar business owner. So, let's go.
Everyone, welcome. This is David Nagel, and you're here at the Successful Mind Podcast. Today, we have a pretty cool topic that I think you'll find very interesting. Anyway, it's called The Addiction to Dysfunctional Relationships. And believe it or not, it's actually an addiction. And I'm going to explain how and why that is and what we can do to start recognizing it in our life. And how do we break this addiction? It's a great question. I remember many years ago, I was sitting in an event, and there was a gentleman who was speaking about his marriage. And he was up at the microphone, and he was talking, and he was explaining what was going on in his marriage, and the gentleman that was doing the event said to him, "Why do you stay in this dysfunctional relationship?" And he said, "Well, I'm in love, of course. I'm in love, and I made a vow, and I plan on seeing this through for the rest of my life." And in mid-sentence, the guy that was up there speaking said, "Excuse me, you're not in love, you're addicted." He said, "You're addicted to her." And I thought to myself, what the hell is that? Like, how can you possibly be addicted to a person? Well, not only is it possible for you to be addicted to a person, I think what is really fascinating about it is how a person would become addicted to a person. Because believe it or not, not everybody is susceptible to this. So what I want to reference is a study that was done, I believe, in the 1950s. I don't remember what scientific community did this study. I just remember hearing about the study. You can look it up online for yourself if you really want to know what it is. Unfortunately, I cannot provide you with a link to this because I do not have it. But here's what the study was. Basically, they took and they put a rat or a mouse in a cage. And there was a lever inside of that cage. And whenever the mouse would push the lever, a little pellet of food would come down. And of course, every time the mouse did this, this little pellet of food would come down and the mouse would be rewarded. Excuse me. So what does that do? It sets up a pattern of cause and effect behavior. The mouse, you know, being the cause, I push this pellet down, I push this lever down, a little pellet of food comes down, I am rewarded for doing that. So it sets up a good neural pathway in the brain. It's a solid neural pathway in the brain. It's a pattern in the brain. It's a pattern in the behavior. And it sets up a positive chemical response in the little mouse's brain's reward system. So the feel-good chemical goes out, and the mouse feels good about his behavior. So they thought, this is interesting. What would happen, though, if we now stopped giving the mouse the reward for pushing down the lever? And actually, I think this was a rat, so I just want to say that. So what they did was they completely took away the ability of a pellet to come down the chute when the rat pushed down this little lever. So the rat would go up, push it, rat would go up, push it, rat would go up, push it. Very quickly, this rat learned that there was nothing coming when it pushed the lever. So it just went around its cage, being a rat, doing its normal rat thing. Didn't seem to be in any kind of distress. You know, everything was fine. And they went, a pattern, right? So the pattern's been broken. seems to be no distress to the rat. What happens if we change it up again? This time, what we're going to do is the rat does not know when the pellet of food is going to come down the little chute. So it could go up to it and push it once, twice, three times. Nothing comes out. But the fourth time, a pellet of food comes out. And so it gets rewarded, but it doesn't know when it's going to be rewarded. So it goes up again, and it's like, I got rewarded. This is great. This feels good. Go back up, push it again. Nothing. All of a sudden, another one comes down. And intermittently. So it could be two times, it could be five times, it could be six times, it could be 10 times. The rat does not know when this is going to come down. But what the rat does do is it stays persistent and literally becomes obsessed, in a sense, with the lever as to when it's going to come down. When is the next pellet going to come down? When am I going to be rewarded? So it just keeps hitting the lever over and over again until a pellet is finally released, and then its reward center is rewarded, and it actually feels good. But this is extremely inconsistent in the rat's mind. It does not set up an idea of cause and effect between this is what I do and this is when the reward comes. So there is some frustration that is taking place within this rat. So now they say, what happens if we take away the reward completely from this rat who was getting it intermittently? And when they did that, basically the rat went totally crazy. It became unbelievably obsessed by trying to hit the lever and get the reward that it was previously getting intermittently. And it would not stop. Not like the previous rat, who was set up psychologically from the perspective of it hits the lever, gets a pellet every single time, and then when they stopped that, it stopped, and the rat accepted that it stopped, and it went about its business, and it didn't seem to suffer any emotional distress whatsoever. But this rat that had this intermittent psychological reward, emotional reward that was set up for it, was actually having a major issue with the idea that it completely stopped altogether and became obsessed and focused on the lever. Okay, so I just want to put that down there as a basis for what we're going to talk about. So what does this have to do with us and dysfunctional relationships? Well, first of all, we would have to ask ourselves, why would we, human beings, smart, intelligent, educated, end up in any kind of a dysfunctional relationship and actually stay in the relationship? And it has a lot to do with the idea of this study with the rat. So for a person to get into a dysfunctional relationship, there needs to be something dysfunctional about you also. Yes, I'm saying that. There needs to be something dysfunctional about you also, particularly in the idea of how we co-interact inside of a relationship. Now, I'm not going to make this too hard on you and give you a little bit of an out here. In order for that to have taken place, it has to be learned behavior that came from your parents. Dysfunction comes from dysfunction. It does not come from health. It comes from dysfunction. So you had to be exposed in some way to this idea at some point in your life. And one of the ways that this takes place with people is in the inherent need, in order to get attention, to get approval, to get love, and to be able to trust that this is going to keep coming to us from the person that we're supposedly in love with, or from the person that we're in relationship with. This is not necessarily just for people that are in love relationships. I see this in business relationships. I see this in client relationships. I see this in sales relationships. I see this all across the board when a person has this dysfunctional need in order to get some kind of approval or love or affection from another human being. So if you take this person and you look back in their life when they were a child, you're going to find that one or both of the parents or caregivers, whoever raised this child, basically did the same thing that the scientists did with this mouse or this rat, where at one moment they were rewarded for certain behavior, and the next moment they either got no reward for the same behavior, or even worse, they were disciplined for this behavior. Now, I have cited a study that was done on rats where they shocked them intermittently. It was almost the same kind of study. It was extremely cruel study, but it was very effective in the research that they found out from it. I'm not saying that I approve of it, but it's a well-documented study about when they shocked rats, and they did basically the same thing, but they applied pain instead of the reward. So it was pretty fascinating. But basically what happened was the same outcome occurred, that once it became intermittent, then they went nuts. They went totally crazy because they were not actually getting the relief, or they were not getting the reward in such a way that they had expected that was going to happen. So think about when you were a kid for a moment, and think about when it was okay or when it was not okay for you to do something in your home with your parents, with your parents' things, whatever that might be. And so let's say your dad had a toolkit, and for the most part, it was okay for you to go into the toolkit and to get the tools and to play with them. Your dad came home and he was like, "That's my boy. He's playing with the tools. He's going to be a man." And that's great. And then one time he comes home and maybe you didn't put the tools away, or you took something apart you weren't supposed to, or whatever. And in your mind, now he goes into a rage, he's pissed off, and you get disciplined for it. But in your mind, you're getting disciplined for the thing that you were getting appreciation and love for prior. This sets up a great deal of confusion in the mind of the child. It also breaks trust in the mind of the child. So what happens is that this is a pattern of behavior that's established within the parents that probably came from their parents and their parents and their parents. I explain this in live events. It's known as the J curve or the generational curve, where basically you have a dysfunction that keeps growing and growing and growing with each subsequent generation until somebody breaks the pattern. When they break the pattern, they're in the bottom of that J where the curve is, and they start to move up into a functional area of life unless they reject the idea, which is what a lot of people do when it comes to dysfunctional relationships. Why? Because in a dysfunctional relationship, what ends up happening is that because we don't trust, we end up withholding love, we end up withholding sex, we end up withholding affection, we end up withholding sometimes communication. People withhold all different kinds of things that they know that their spouse needs and wants. And they do this sometimes as a passive-aggressive behavior. They do this sometimes in a way of shutting down, avoiding intimacy. There's a lot of different reasons why they do it based on what their generational makeup was. But make no bones about it, it's a learned behavior. They have experienced this in their life. It is something that has been done to them when they were small children. And they're repeating the pattern again with their spouse or their partner or their lover or their business partner or their employee or whoever it is that it might be. So what happens with the other person that's on the other side of this is that, generally in the beginning of a relationship, we are getting what it is that we want in that relationship. We have a mutual attraction that takes place. If the relationship continues, love occurs. We're getting our needs met in that relationship, or at least most of them. And we're falling in love with this individual. Well, what happens when we have those feelings for someone and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, we don't even necessarily know what the reason is because we didn't change anything, all of a sudden they start pulling away from us. It becomes incredibly painful because that person that we love, that we want to communicate with, that we feel attached with, is that person is actually pulling away. So we start to experience the same discomfort that rat felt, that this, I'm no longer getting my reward. I'm doing, you know, I have an idea of what my spouse's needs are. I'm trying to make sure that I'm doing my part to meet my spouse's needs, yet they're not responding. There's no response. And then this goes on for a while, and maybe we say something or something happens, and all of a sudden the spouse starts responding again, like, oh, okay, so I guess everything's okay now. But we're never addressing the fact that why did this happen in the first place? We just feel relieved that everything is okay. You'll also find this as a conflict avoidance. A lot of people that really have major issues with conflict, instead of actually saying to their partner, hey, what's going on with you? You haven't touched me in a week. You haven't said I loved you. There hasn't been any sex. There hasn't been any affection. Something's wrong. Please talk to me. I need you to have a conversation with me about what it is that's going on. And if a person has a conflict avoidance, they're not going to do that. They're just going to leave it alone, and they get into hoping and wishing, which is magical thinking, which I'm going to get into in a moment, that something's going to change. And oh yes, there's definitely something that changes. What changes is that we start getting an intermittent reward. Now, this can happen just on a purely dysfunctional level, but you also need to know that on more severe levels of this, when we start to get into more of a psychological dysfunction, like a severe psychological dysfunction, like borderline personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, sociopathy, these things are actually being done intentional by that person because their whole aim is to control the person that they're with. So now we're talking about something that's much more severe. We're talking about a person who is intentionally lighting up your reward system when you first got together. How many of you have had an experience where you met someone and when you met them, it didn't take very long and you thought you met the love of your life? I mean, they were just everything in one package that you could ever hope to meet in your wildest dreams. And you fall madly in love and you get married and everything seems to be this this really romantic, beautiful idea in your mind of the way that it's supposed to be. And then before you know it, the person is withdrawing, pushing away, or maybe even in worst cases, they're abusing you in some way. Besides that, withholding love is abuse. You should know that right up front. Withholding love and affection is a form of abuse. There's no question about it. So this quick attachment is a severe sign. It is a severe sign of a dysfunction that is going on, because when we have quick attachment, we are almost always getting involved with somebody that has a psychological disorder. It is one of the very first signs that a person has a psychological disorder when they get involved in a relationship and there's quick attachment. Like they go from zero to engagement or moving in, you know, in a matter of days or weeks or maybe even just a few months. Something is not right there. There is not a gestation period that is taking place where we're getting to know this person. We're getting to know our likes and dislikes. We're seeing how, you know, are we compatible together? And really doing some serious thinking about the fact that we want to commingle with this person for an extended period of time, possibly a lifetime commitment. We're just going, you know, all guns blazing into this situation. and we're not really giving it a thought. It's completely emotionally led. Well, when that's going on, it's coming from completely being emotionally starved. And you can definitely tell when a person is completely emotionally starved because they have been experiencing this most of their life. They were emotionally starved probably as infants. They were emotionally starved as children. And yet, most of the time, this is the most bizarre thing about it, they won't always believe that they will. I've literally had people tell me, I came from the most absolutely loving family. And then when you sit there and you kind of unwind what it is that they actually came from and how their parents treated them, and they actually can see the dysfunction on how that the affection was taken away and how it was given, the roles and the patterns that they developed in their life as children in order to be able to survive that and come out on the other side of it, they're absolutely astonished. And, you know, it's kind of like there's an old saying, you hear people talk about this all the time, we grew up poor, but we didn't know that we were poor because they didn't have anything to compare it to. Well, a lot of people that grow up in abusive households don't know they're growing up in abusive households because they don't know what's going on behind other people's doors. They have not seen what a healthy family actually looks like. So they either downplay it, they deny it, they do all different kinds of things, or they're in total ignorance. They're in total ignorance about the idea that what they went through was actually abuse, and they're literally shocked when they find out that it is. So, what do we do? How do we change this? The first thing that I want you to understand is the difference between trust and magical thinking. So what I'm going to do is I just want to quote something from the book Trust, Mastering the Four Essential Trusts by Alanya Van Zandt, where she says, when you do not trust yourself, what you feel and what you know, you will expect people to be who they are not. Now, let's think about that for a moment. When you don't trust yourself, when you don't trust yourself, in other words, when you don't know yourself, when you don't accept yourself, when you don't really understand yourself, as long as you stay in denial that you may have dysfunctions of your own and you're not actually working on them and healing them, you will expect other people to be who they are not. I have a saying, when a person shows you who they are the first time, believe them. Okay, let me say that one more time. When a person shows you who they are the first time, believe them. Why? Because the average person doesn't change. Now, I am not saying a person does not have the ability to change. I believe everybody has the ability to change. But psychological statistics show that deeply dysfunctional people rarely change. And the main reason that they don't change is because they refuse to believe that anything that's going wrong in their life has anything to do with them. It's always somebody else's fault. Do you know someone like this? Do you know someone intimately like this? Meaning that, could it be you? Could it be your partner? Could it be someone that's in your life that is in complete denial about anything that's going on and it's always your fault? Or if it's you, is it always somebody else's fault? Nothing is just always one person's fault. Okay, so here's what she goes on to say. You will hope against hope that they will do things you already know they cannot do. So what is that? Right? That is denial of the worst kind, right? So you see the behavior over and over and over again, and you hope that they will change, even though you know that they can't, you know that they won't. And if you didn't know it before this podcast, you know it now. You will expect them to be who you want them to be, rather than trusting what you know about who they are and what they're capable of doing. This is not trust. This is magical thinking. And engaging in it will set you up for a big letdown. Trusting yourself is important when dealing with others. It protects you from repeated violations and devastating heartbreaks. Okay? So, one of the first things that we have to do, it all really comes back down to, you know, like what Maslow said many years ago about self-actualization, we have to get to know ourselves. We have to know what we want, what we need. We also have to ask ourselves, currently in the state that we're in right now, do we have the ability to give that to somebody else? Do we play those games with other people? Do we withhold affection? Do we withhold appreciation? Do we withhold love? Do we withhold sex? Do we punish someone because they didn't do something that we wanted them to do? If you're doing that, it's abuse. And it's coming from a dysfunctional pattern inside of yourself from your parents, okay? So here's the thing. I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad about themselves. I never try to do that. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get people to see what's actually going on within the patterns that they have carried down from their childhood into their adulthood and are causing problems in their life where they keep repeating the same problem over and over and over again. Sometimes we have to hit the pause button on everybody else in our life, and we have to pull back and say, what the fuck is going on with me? Because everything in my life is a creation that I'm actually creating. So I may not be responsible for what somebody else does, but if they're in my life, I'm responsible for them being in my life. I can set a boundary and say, absolutely no more. I will not do this anymore in my life. I'm going to go work on me. I'm going to really get to know me. I'm going to work on dysfunctional aspects of me. I'm going to become a whole me where I can trust me and then take myself back out in the world and find somebody that will join with me in that ideology. Doesn't that make more sense? I think it does. And I think that it sets us up for better relationships all the way around in our life. It sets up for great conversation. It sets up for productivity. It sets up for love between two people. It does set up for you finding your soulmate if that's what you believe about relationships in this life. Is there somebody else out there matched to you from a higher perspective for you to go through your life with? I believe that there is. I absolutely believe that there is. And maybe you're both in a dysfunctional state right now and you can't even see each other. Think about that. Because sometimes those things repel us from the greatest person that we're about to meet in our life. So what's the key? The key is to learn to trust yourself first. Go back to the idea of learning the cause and effect of reward by giving it to yourself. Give it to yourself over and over again. Learn to trust yourself. And then what'll happen is that when you're with somebody that does not do that, it will stand out like the biggest red flag you've ever seen in your life, and you will run for the hills, which would be the best thing that you could do for you. And it would also be the best thing that they could do for them. Because hopefully at some point when enough people walk away from that person, they will realize that, hey, maybe there is something going on with me, and they will seek help and they will heal themselves so they don't have to live in that kind of desperation anymore. So I know that was a mouthful. It was a big one, right? Okay. I hope you all have an absolutely fantastic day. Go back to the idea that you're going to get to know yourself the best first, and then that take that out into the world and live your highest dream. See you on the next Successful Mind Podcast. This is David Nagel. Have a great day. Thanks so much for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to any resources mentioned in today's episode. And while you're there, leave us a review. I read every one. You can connect with me on Instagram and Facebook as well, and those links can be found in the show notes. And check out my free gift for being an avid listener at davidnagel.com/startHere. See you next week.